Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Re'eh. Please join me as a donor to Pardes. Pardes is a small institution, so your gift will make a real difference in Pardes' mission of open, non-denominational Torah studies. Pardes can accept your donation anytime online via donate.pardesusa.org. Thank you very much for your gift. It'll make a real difference, and we especially appreciate it as we approach the new year. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreuz discusses Re'eh. Rabbi David Levenkreuz is a member of the Pardes faculty and serves as the Pardes Director of Special Programs. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreuz.
Thank you, Larry. Years ago, I took an advertising course. And in that advertising course, they said that there are two words that you should use in every ad, if at all possible. One of them was the word free, and the other was the word new. Now, I don't know how effective these are in advertising, but years later, I was thinking that this is indeed, these two words are the basis of what modernity is about. We moderns have an assumption that new is better, the latest gadget, the latest insight is better than what was before, and we want to be free, not necessarily in the sense of not costing money, but in the sense of maximizing our liberty, of being able to do as much as we can according to what we want to do. Now, new and free might be great, but they are a challenge for traditional religions, especially Judaism, that are based not on new and free, but on antiquity and obedience. In many parts of the Torah, we read in the Talmud that things are better if they're older. We're closer to Mount Sinai. We're closer to the source. Similarly, in classic Judaism, one shows one's commitment not by one's creativity, but by doing what the halakha says. And this indeed is the basis of all of Jewish philosophy. How to deal with new and free. For some, it's business as usual. God's law has not changed because of a new zeitgeist. And the only real question is how to use our freedom to maximize the observance of halakha. The Reform movement, on the other hand, took a radical approach, a brave and revolutionary approach. And that was they embraced the new and the free. They said, what would it look like? What does Judaism look like if we decide that these concepts are part of who we are and still choose to remain committed Jews? For many contemporary progressive Jews, the concept of informed choice is an important one. I learn about a halakha or a belief or a practice. I try it out. I see if it works. If it does, it becomes part of who I am and part of my practice. If not, I look for other things. There's a third group, though. We have the business as usual group, the embracing new and free group, but there is a third group. This group want to have their cake and eat it. They want to affirm the value of free choice. They see that this is a powerful idea, but they still want to take halakha seriously and want to make it obligatory and believe that halakha is obligatory. Very often, to try and prove that the Torah does indeed value choice, the opening words of this week's parsha, Re'eh, are quoted. Re'eh, see, Anochi noten lifnechem hayom, I set before you bracha uklala, blessing and curse. Et habracha asher tishmeu et mitzvot Adonai Elohechem, asher anochi mitzavchem hayom. Blessing, if you will obey the commandments of the Lord your God, that I enjoin upon you this day. V'haklala im lo tishmeu et mitzvot Adonai Elohechem, v'sartem min haderech, asher ani mitzave et chom hayom, lalechet achare Elohim achirim, asher lo yadatem, and curse, if you do not obey the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn away from the path that I enjoin upon you this day, and follow other gods whom you have not experienced. It's indeed rather strange that this pasuk is brought up to prove choice. Yes, it does speak about human beings having free will, but this is not real choice. This is a choice of saying, like, would you rather be good and happy and healthy and rich, or poor and bad and sad and unhappy? It's not real. It's not a real choice. It's clear which way God would like us to go. So it's not enough to harness the ideas about free choice in classic Judaism. People in this third position, the wanting to have their cake and eat it position, need something else to affirm choosing and also the halachic system. And I'm going to look at three different approaches. The one, which is identified with the school of the German philosopher Franz Rosenzweig, starts off with an idea like this. If a Jewish man, God forbid, does not have an arm, he's not obligated to put on tefillin. The mitzvah simply does not apply to him. Similarly, this approach says that it's inauthentic to do a mitzvah that doesn't feel right. If I do a mitzvah but my heart is not really in it, it's not right. And if I cannot connect to a mitzvah, I'm in fact freed from doing it. So far, similar to the reform approach. Where it differs is this approach would say that once I feel a connection to a mitzvah, it becomes an internal command. It becomes something that I become self-obligated to do. This approach is often called the not-yet approach, after Franz Rosenzweig's famous quip. When somebody asked him, are you putting tefillin on every day? He said, not yet. For this approach, one should strive to do as much of halakha as one can. And the idea is that it will be self-reinforcing. If I start keeping kosher in the home, I want to keep kosher out of the home. If I start keeping kosher out of the home, I want to speak less gossip. If I gossip less, I want to keep the laws of shatness, forbidding linen and wool to be mixed. The idea is that the halakha is self-reinforcing, and slowly, as I learn more halakha and keep more halakha, I will be attracted to do the other mitzvot. So this is Franz Rosenzweig's not-yet halakha self-reinforcing approach. Another approach is identified with Yitz Greenberg, with Rabbi Yitz Greenberg. Greenberg believes in the very, very radical and upsetting notion, I would say, that God cancelled the covenant with the Shoah. With the Shoah, where no punishment could be as terrible as what really happened, God cancelled the covenant. God no longer expects us to keep the covenant. God can no longer command us, because you cannot command people to go on a suicide mission. But, says Rabbi Greenberg, the Jewish people were so in love with the idea of redemption that they committed themselves to continuing the tradition. We as a people self-committed. I have problems with both approaches. With the approach of Rosenzweig of the maximum halakha, the not yet approach, I ask what happens when halakha is no longer reinforcing. The fact of the matter is that Rosenzweig died sadly and tragically very young, and perhaps he had not come to the point where you're keeping more and more halakha, and sometimes it just doesn't feel good, sometimes you just don't get anything out of it, sometimes you just daven day after day after day after day, and it doesn't mean anything. What happens when it's no longer self-reinforcing? Similarly with Greenberg, although I think it's a very, very strong argument, there's a certain negativity around it, which I find very difficult to square with a positive and future-looking approach to Judaism. And so I'd like to suggest a third approach to the third approach. We had the business as usual, we had the reform, and we had have your cake and eat it, we had Rosenzweig, we had Greenberg. The third approach is based on the Reconstructionist thinker Mordechai Kaplan. For Kaplan, the question about a mitzvah was not, is it true, but does it work? He had a pragmatic approach to mitzvot. Do they succeed in creating a good world and good people and a rich life? Great. Then let's keep him. If not, not. And usually this approach is used to defend the picking and choosing method. I look at the mitzvot and I take what works. What I would like to claim is that the system only works if you buy into the whole system. Halakha is, if you will, a spiritual discipline. Rather like Buddhist meditation only works if you do it regularly. I've just come from the gym and I've heard from the umpteenth time that unless I exercise at home, the gym is not going to help. Things have to be done regularly. In order for the system to work, one has to keep the whole system. I'm aware that there's not only one Jewish system, but many. But I still believe very, very strongly in full commitment. Heschel spoke of this. In a famous story which he told in 1953, he tells about his times in Berlin when he was very, very unhappy and he was walking the streets of Berlin. And he suddenly has a spiritual moment, but he also realizes the time has come to daven Ma'ariv, the evening prayer. What does he do? Does he stay with the moment? Or does he daven Ma'ariv? This is what he wrote. What I wanted to avoid was not only the failure to pray to God during a whole evening of my life, but the loss of the whole, the loss of belonging to the spiritual order of Jewish living. It is true that some people are so busy with collecting shreds and patches of the law that they hardly think of weaving the pattern of the whole. But there is also the danger of becoming so enchanted by the whole so as to lose sight of the detail. It became increasingly clear to me that the order of Jewish living is meant to be not a set of rituals, but an order of all of our existence, shaping our traits, interests, and disposition. Not so much the performance of single acts, the taking of a step now and then, as this pursuit of a way, being on the way. Not so much the act of fulfilling, as the state of being committed to the task, the belonging to an order in which single deeds, aggregates of religious feeling, sporadic sentiments, moral episodes, become part of a complete pattern. Heschel is saying that too many people are interested in doing a mitzvah here and a mitzvah there, and forget that there is a whole, and that all these little acts, which sometimes mean something and sometimes don't, are part of building the big picture. He avoids the problem of what happens when halakha is not self-reinforcing. That's the nature of the system. For Heschel himself, he believed very, very strongly in the tension between kavanah and keva. For him, it was very important that we did all the mitzvot with intention. But nevertheless, although he did not say it per se, I think this approach of looking at the pattern and looking at the whole and seeing how each little block goes up to create the larger picture can be very, very helpful for us who want to keep the entire system, who know it's sometimes not self-reinforcing, but also know that the system works when it's kept as a system. I think this avoids the problem of Rosenzweig, of what happens when halakha is not self-reinforcing, and I think, unlike Greenberg, this is a positive way of looking at things. So I rewrote the opening of this week's parasha in terms of this philosophy. See this day, I set before you blessing and curse. Through keeping the commandments you will be blessed, but turning away from the path I enjoin upon you this day will not work. I'm the first to admit that this does not have the power of the original. This does not have the force of the Torah. But I believe that there are many, many Jews who can be attracted and who are attracted by this approach. And I believe through doing this in our own way, we are fulfilling the beginning of this week's parsha. Re'ei anochi noten lifnechem hayom bracha uklala. Et habracha asher tishmu'u et mitzvot Adonai Elohechem, asher ani mitzaveh etchem hayom. Va'klala im lo tishmu'u et mitzvot Adonai Elohechem, v'sartem min aderech, asher anochi mitzaveh etchem hayom, lalechet acharei Elohim achirim, asher lo yedatem. See this day, I set before you blessing and curse. Blessing you if you obey the commandments of your Lord, your God, that I enjoin upon you this day. And curse if you do not obey the commandments of the Lord, your God, but turn away from the path that I enjoin upon you this day, and follow other gods whom you have not experienced. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.